reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. U.S. Senator Peter Welch of the northeastern state of Vermont is calling on President Joe Biden to end his reelection campaign. Welch is the first senator in the president's Democratic Party to urge Biden to step aside after his dismal debate against Republican former President Donald Trump last month. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has more.
He says he does it with sadness, but writing in the Washington Post says the stakes could not be higher, and we cannot unsee President Biden's disastrous debate performance. Still, the first-term senator says Vermonters love Biden, and Barbara Wade in Cabot says,
I think he's been one of our best presidents ever. He's accomplished so much that is not being touted.
Beth Wade adds,
going to be 77 myself, I feel my age. Everything's a little creaky. I don't move like I did. He doesn't either. But that doesn't mean we're not with it and we're not capable.
Barbara Wade says she would vote for any alternative to Donald Trump, but worries.
If it means that more people will vote for Trump, then that's the danger.
I'm Ben Thomas.
The rising voices urging Biden to quit the race came as the president and his wife Jill welcomed NATO leaders and partners to a dinner at the White House Wednesday night. Biden applauded the Western Military Alliance's 75th anniversary, which he described as a neighborhood of nations.
75 years ago, when our nations created NATO, former President Truman said, and I quote, what we're about to do here is a neighborly act. A neighborly act. The allies in this room not only share a common language, don't share a common language, we do not share a common border, but we are neighbors. We're neighbors because we all share common beliefs in dignity, equality, democracy, and freedom.
This is VOA News. Biden will hold a press conference Thursday at the end of the NATO summit. Observers say the president needs to pull off a strong performance before reporters to end growing concerns that he is still able to continue in the race and as president. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg stated during a press conference early Wednesday that NATO's 32 allies had collectively identified China as a decisive enabler of Russia's war in Ukraine, calling it an important message.
China provides dual-use equipment, microelectronics, a lot of other tools which are enabling Russia to build the missiles, to build the bombs, to build the aircraft, to build the weapons they are using to attack Ukraine.
Additionally, Stoltenberg highlighted historic increases in defense investment within the alliance, noting that 23 allies are now investing at least 2% of their GDP in defense, compared to just 3 allies meeting this percentage in 2014. Russia has declared the Moscow Times newspaper undesirable amid a crackdown on criticism. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports.
It was designated as a foreign agent late last year. The new designation means the newspaper, which is popular with those in Russia's expat community, must stop work of any kind in Russia. It also subjects any Russian who cooperates with the paper to up to 5 years in prison. The Moscow Times already moved its editorial operations out of Russia in 2022 after the passage of a law imposing stiff penalties for material regarded as discrediting the Russian military and its war in Ukraine. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
A prolonged heat wave sent temperatures in the western U.S. city of Las Vegas soaring above 46 degrees Celsius for the fifth consecutive day Wednesday. The heat wave set the gambling destination's all-time temperature record of 48.8 degrees Celsius on Sunday. National Weather Service meteorologist Morgan Stessman told the Associated Press that June was the hottest month on record in Las Vegas.
If you look back at the month of June and we look at the average temperature overall, that set the hottest on record for the Las Vegas area with an average temperature of about 94.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And our previous hottest June ever was in 2016, and this broke that record by 1.8 degrees.
Stessman says the Las Vegas area has been under an excessive heat warning on 3 separate occasions this summer, totaling about 12 days of dangerous heat with little relief even after the sun goes down. Follow us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at voanews.com. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Day breakout for California Voices of America. I'm James Buffy in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The African Union convenes a week-long panel discussion among Sudanese to promote peace in their country.
The African Union has only one objective, namely how to bring an end to the war, how to bring peace to Sudan.
Nigerian lawmakers seek a probe of the controversial deal with the European Union. Namibia struggles with a growing seal population that threatens the fishing industry. Tensions are high in Guinea-Conakry over the alleged arrest of two civil society leaders.
They're not disappeared only like that. They were arrested. What the family told us last night, that they were kidnapped, as they said, by the soldier men. Who are they? We don't know for the moment.
And a handbook prepared for Trump explains how to take direct control of the government bureaucracy if he wins the presidency. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The African Union has convened a week-long panel discussion among Sudanese on the way forward for peace in Sudan's nearly 15-month-old civil war. There have been several attempts to find peace in Sudan, but to no avail. Mohamed Ibn Chambers is the chairperson of the AU High-Level Panel on Sudan. He tells me that the AU has one objective, which is to end the war by bringing together Sudanese from all sectors of society.
The attempt here is to bring Sudanese political and civil actors together, and in doing so, seek to be as inclusive as possible. Bring political parties, civil society organizations, professional groups, traditional authorities, youth and women groups, to seek to get them to discuss the ongoing crisis in Sudan, which is a deep crisis. The fighting is still going on with devastating consequences for the population, for the people who are being killed, or displaced populations who are living under very harsh conditions, for many Sudanese who have had to flee their country, maybe for the third time, and to have them as Sudanese have a dialogue among themselves to agree an agenda for an inclusive inter-Sudanese dialogue. And so this first initiative is to bring the Sudanese together in what we are calling a preparatory meeting.
I was reading once that this coordination of the civilian democratic forces, also known as Tagadum, has declined to participate in this dialogue because they say that the meeting design lacks transparency. Is that the case?
Lack of transparency, that cannot be the case. We have consulted more with Tagadum than with any other group that is here, partly because for a while they were based here in Addis, preparing for their founding conference. We suspended the holding of this meeting two times to allow them to have their founding congress. Once they completed their founding congress, we met with their interim executive to discuss with them this conference and the convening of it. We take in good faith their inability to participate this time. We have assured them that we will continue our consultations with them because the African Union has only one objective, namely how to bring an end to the war, how to bring peace to Sudan, and how to work with all civilian groups to ensure that they engage in an inclusive dialogue process to arrive at a comprehensive agreement which will enable Sudanese population, civilian population, to establish a civilian-led government.
Mr. Chambers, the Sudan conflict began over a year ago. There have been several peace proposals. All of them have so far failed to end the conflict. Is it safe to say that the African Union is coming too late to the peace process?
There can never be an intervention which is too late. The situation demands determined effort to end the war, to get the belligerents to stop fighting, to improve the conditions of the population by opening up access so that relief can get into the country so that international humanitarian actors, local civil society humanitarian actors, so that they can be able to receive the humanitarian assistance in order to provide to the population. But above all, there also has to be an attempt at bringing about dialogue, political dialogue. And this is the aspect of the crisis that the African Union high-level panel is concentrating on.
Mohamed Ibn Chambas is the chairperson of the African Union high-level panel on Sudan. He was speaking with us from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Large parts of war-torn Sudan are inaccessible to aid workers, a Red Cross official said on Wednesday, as devastating fighting between the army and the paramilitaries rages on. War has raged since April 2023 between the regular army under Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the paramilitary rapid support forces led by his former deputy, Mohamed Hamdan Daglo. The conflict has left tens of thousands dead and displaced more than 10 million people, according to the United Nations. The French news agency AFP reports that a recent UN-backed study said nearly 26 million people, or slightly more than half of the population, were facing high levels of acute food insecurity. There is concern in Guinea-Conakry over the whereabouts of two leading members of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, also known as FNDC. Civil society groups say the two were arrested Tuesday for planning a protest to pressure the military junta led by Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya to return the country to democratic rule by the end of this year, as promised. This after a junta spokesperson said the transition had no time limit. Daouda Mohamed Camara is the editor-in-chief at Espars FM. He tells me that the situation is made worse by restriction on the media and a declining economy.
First of all, nearly 2 months ago, when Fonike Menge, the national coordinator of FNDC, came back to Guinea after many months out of Guinea, in Europe, United States, and other, he came and multiplied some meeting with youth, women and other civil societies to prepare the protestation against the way the transition is going on today, and to make everybody ready to protest as from December 2024, because that's the deadline given by the junta to the ECOWAS for the end of the transition. Because nothing is going on that way, that's why Fonike Menge and the other civil society members are multiplying meetings with youth, women, and other political leaders to be ready to protest for them to not go over December 2024. That started by calling citizens to be wearing red shirts every Thursday to protest against the way the transition is going on today.
Did they just disappear or they were arrested? What is the truth?
They're not disappeared only like that. They were arrested. What the family told us last night, that they were kidnapped, as they said, by the soldier men. Who are they? We don't know for the moment. And really, they are not disappeared. They are arrested. That's what the truth.
If they were arrested, then why were they arrested?
Why they are arrested? That's very clear. Because of their position, as I told you, they have started some meeting with youth, women, and political leaders to get ready to go on protest for the way the transition is going on today, because they are now trying to tell people that the transition has no deadline, and they are focused on what they are doing, their work, and there's no deadline for the transition. That's why the civil society members are now gathering people to get one way, to get one word, and go against this position.
What is the general view of most Guineans about the transition?
The majority of Guineans are against any extension of this transition because there's no more freedom in the country. The market is expensive. The medias are closed. There's no good news heard by the citizens. That's why today the majority is for the end of this transition.
Dauda Mohamed Kamara is the editor-in-chief at Espace FM. He was speaking with us from Guinea's capital, Conakry. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 11th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Nigeria's parliament has called for investigations of a controversial deal that the federal authorities signed with the European Union in late June. The so-called Samoa Agreement sparked nationwide debate following a media report that some of the deal's clauses could potentially promote same-sex relationships. Nigerian authorities have denied the claims and promised to act against news organizations promoting them. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The controversial Samoa deal was one of the main issues debated by legislators at Tuesday's parliamentary session. The lawmakers said authorities did not consult them before signing the bill, and a majority voted for the agreement named after the Pacific island nation of Samoa, where it was first reached in November last year, to be investigated further by lawmakers. The critics said the agreement needs to be clearer on clauses that promote gender rights. Aliu Madaki spoke at parliament.
The phrase gender equality, as reported, is a Trojan horse for deceptively bringing in all sorts of immorality to our country, as gender no longer means sexes, male and female, as traditionally understood. It now includes homosexualism, lesbianism, transgenderism, and animalism.
Nigerian authorities signed the Samoa Agreement between the EU and 79 other countries, including African, Caribbean, and Pacific nations on June 28th. Authorities say the agreement aims to strengthen partnerships for democratic norms, human rights, and promote economic growth and development. It's also designed to help member nations tackle common challenges like climate change, migration, and security. Authorities said Nigeria signed after extensive reviews and consultations. But the pact became a topic of national discussion following a report by a Nigerian newspaper, The Daily Trust, which said the deal's clause on gender rights could be misinterpreted to promote same-sex relationships. This week, Nigerian authorities held a media briefing in Abuja to debunk such claims and promised to sue the newspaper. Authorities also refuted claims that Nigeria will pocket $150 billion from signing the deal. Mohammed Idris Malagi is Nigeria's information minister. He spoke to journalists.
We are alarmed by the level of reckless reporting and statements by some media organizations and individuals that bother on national security and stability. We found that despicable and wicked because the allegation is nowhere in the document signed on behalf of the federal government. It is, however, disheartening that some elements are abusing this free environment guaranteed by the government.
Nigeria outlawed same-sex relations in 2014 and has stipulated a harsh 14-year jail term for offenders. On Tuesday, the Nigerian Bar Association backed the government's position after reviewing the agreement. But the chairman of Human Rights Committee at the African Bar Association, Sonny Ekwokusi, says Madaki is making a valid point. He spoke to Lagos-based Channels Television about the deal.
If the minister wants to do a debate, I can appear, we can talk about it, can bring the agreement, and I can explain the language of that agreement. I'm familiar with them because I also go to the United Nations This SAMO agreement is littered with euphemisms of the EU and euphemisms of the United Nations. I know the language of the EU. I know what they are talking about.
Daily Trust has said its reporting was in the interest of the public and that it will apologize only when it is proven that the gender rights cited in the agreement means traditional male-female relationships and nothing more. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
A Uganda TikToker was condemned Wednesday to 6 years in prison for spreading misleading and malicious information after he insulted President Yoweri Museveni, his wife, and their son. According to prosecutors, Edward Awebua, between February and March, posted vulgar videos about the first family. The 24-year-old had pleaded guilty. Judge Stella Maris Anabeles, who read the court's decision, said Awebua is pleading for mercy, but he does not look remorseful at all for his actions. According to the French news agency AFP, NGOs routinely denounce human rights violations in the East African country, which has been ruled with an iron fist by Museveni since 1986. Namibia's Ministry of Fisheries and Marine Resources recently announced it will attempt to reduce the local seal population by 80,000 this year, despite opposition from animal rights groups. Authorities said the reduction is necessary to maintain balance in Namibia's marine ecosystem and keep the seals from hurting the country's fish industry. Vitalia Angula reports from The Hague, Namibia.
The executive director at Namibia's Ministry of Fisheries and Marine Resources, Anali Haifene, says the increasing seal population in Namibian waters has become a major cause for concern. Speaking to VOA in the capital, she said that over the past 3 years, seal numbers have increased from 1.3 million to 1.6 million. She says this is an indication of healthy marine ecosystem, but can also be seen as a threat to the country's $10 billion fishing industry because seals prey on the fish and fishing is one of Namibia's largest contributors to the country's GDP. Haifene says last year's seal harvest was disappointing because the companies that hold rights to catch seals along Namibia's coastline harvested less than 50% of the total allowable catch.
The challenge is really the market. There's no demand for PAP's product. And therefore, even if you harvest them, you are likely not to make any economic sense out of the PAP. However, for the bulls, the challenge is also the market, but at least the product can be used anyway, except that the markets are not there.
The main market for seal pelts and food products is China. However, demand has dropped because of an international ban on seal fur. Last year, the total allowable catch for seal pups was 80,000. Only 3,764, or 5% of the target, was harvested. The companies harvested more grown seals, catching about 3,100 of the 6,000 allowed. Haifene says the poor outcome of Namibia's seal harvest last year is because of opposition from animal rights groups. Naude Dreyer of Ocean Conservation Namibia says Namibia's attempt to reduce the seal population is having the opposite effect of what the ministry is trying to achieve.
By taking out the biggest bulls in the group, you are messing with the harem structure in the group. So normally a big bull would have up to 50 females underneath him, which he would then be fighting with other big bulls to keep them sort of exclusively his. By taking out those big bulls, this allows much younger males to come in and do the mating.
Namibia is the only country in the global south where seal harvesting takes place. Other countries that harvest seals include the United States, Canada, Denmark, Iceland, Norway, Russia, Finland, and Sweden. Namibian seals live in three colonies along the country's 1,500-kilometer coastline. This year's harvest is set to end in November, and the authorities believe the harvest will be lesser than last year's due to declining interest in seal products on the international market. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
If former U.S. President Donald Trump wins the November election in his rematch with current President Joe Biden, he may seek to replace the entire federal bureaucracy under direct presidential control. That move is outlined in a playbook crafted by more than 100 conservative organizations for a prospective second Trump administration. Details from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman at the White House.
Donald Trump, campaigning for president 8 years ago, promised to bend Washington's bureaucracy to his will.
If I'm elected president, we are going to drain the swamp in Washington, D.C.
Trump's continuing vow to drain the swamp, meaning to rid government of those who impose policy but are unaccountable to the president, is now backed with a blueprint crafted by more than 100 conservative groups. Project 2025, published by the right-wing Heritage Foundation, instructs how to swing a wrecking ball against the administrative state. Heritage Foundation President Kevin Roberts is warning there may be violence along the journey to its implementation.
We are in the process of the second American Revolution, which will remain bloodless if the left allows it to be.
After that incendiary comment, Trump tried to distance himself from Project 2025, asserting that while he knows nothing about it and its authors, I disagree with some of the things they're saying. The project's head, Paul Danz, appearing on C-SPAN, left no doubt Trump's words and ideas were the inspiration.
He was president for 4 years, so many of the ideas are carry-ons from his original work. So I would like to think that a lot of it does kind of spring from that first term of Trump.
VOA requested an interview with the Heritage Foundation. The think tank said it could not make anyone available, but emailed a statement stressing Project 2025 does not speak for any candidate or campaign. Project 2025 seeks to eliminate the checks and balances writers of the Constitution, such as James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, crafted through dividing power among the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of the government, according to Will Marshall, the president of the Progressive Policy Institute.
Madison and Jefferson ought to be spinning in their graves when they see how much power they want to concentrate in the next president's hands, and if that president happens to be Donald Trump, then it's a kind of a nightmare for the country, given the way he's misused power in the past.
President Joe Biden's reelection campaign has made Project 2025 a primary target, setting up a separate website dedicated to criticism of it and highlighting liberal media reaction.
Critics are calling it the fascist playbook, and it should be one of the reasons, if not the reason.
The sweeping plan also calls for slashing government funding for renewable energy and climate change mitigation. The Department of Education would be eliminated. The Federal Bureau of Investigation would be overhauled top to bottom, as would the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which oversees the Voice of America. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
And that's it for this Thursday, July 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, D.C. Have a great day, and please be safe, whatever you do.
Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join me for the latest in health news, wellness tips, medical breakthroughs, and much more. Our experts inside the United States and beyond will share some insights on living a healthy life.
Tuesdays at